Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Behind the Black, Bob Zimmerman is here to take us to the NASA budget. $24.9 billion was the budget the previous fiscal year. The proposed is $18.6 billion. That's roughly 25%. This is proposed by the White House, and the Congress will dispose. Bob, a very good evening to you. The disappointment everywhere is a reduction in budget. An emphasis, I believe, on man. What can we learn from this budget? Good evening to you, Bob.
Good evening, John. Well, your listeners are going to get an analysis here that they will not get from any other news source, it appears, because all news sources that I've seen, outlets, they do the routine garbage that I've seen now my entire life, that any federal cut in any federal program will destroy the universe and end all civilization. Every news report entirely opposes any cuts. And in this case, you're not going to hear that here, even though I'm a space guy. The Trump budget having to do with NASA, that's what I looked at in detail. I have not looked at the rest of the Trump proposed budget, but the NASA budget, I did a page-by-page analysis of it. And overall, my sense of what Trump is trying to do with this 24% cut at NASA is an overall managerial strategy. How can we trim, tighten, and make NASA more efficient so that it can get done its fundamental purpose, which is to make the exploration of the solar system possible for Americans? That's its fundamental purpose. And it has been failing at that purpose now for 50, 60 years since the Apollo missions. It just has been failing. It has not been making Americans capable of exploring the solar system. So this budget does a bunch of different things, and I will once again emphasize, if you look at the whole thing, overall, it actually, there's a lot of logic to these cuts. The Trump administration wants to cut the SLS rocket off after two more flights. Let it finish the two flights that are being prepared right now and built, have already been built. The capsules, Orion capsules, let them fly as well. There are questions about doing that with people on board, considering the safety issues of these very untested questionable technical rockets and capsules. But besides the point, he says, let's at least finish those two missions, then phase it out. He wants to cut entirely the Lunar Gateway space station, which from the day one when it was proposed by NASA, not by Congress, not by a president, but by NASA, and pushed through in conjunction with Lockheed Martin and a lot of big space companies, I've been saying this is a bad idea. It doesn't really accomplish anything. It's in the way. He wants to cut that too, save some money. And then he wants to focus, put more money into manned space, though, but do it using commercial assets. Don't build things by NASA, but have the private enterprise do it. And that means there's a shift from the moon towards Mars, but it doesn't abandon going to the moon as well. And the reason it shifts towards Mars is because you're going to use commercial assets. One of those commercial assets will be coming from SpaceX, and SpaceX wants to go to Mars. So you're going to follow the lead of the private enterprise, which is the way the government should work as our servant, follow the lead of the American people. In terms of cuts, there are significant cuts throughout the science program. A lot of missions are going to be canceled that haven't been flown. There's even cuts to some flying missions right now. I can get into that in a minute. The bottom line, though, is that most of the news reports are going to focus entirely on the cuts to projects, planned projects, or projects that are ongoing. But a lot of the cuts to planned projects are not really cuts. A lot of times what they've done is they've consolidated duplicate programs into one to save money. There's a lot of offices at NASA that do the same thing and can be cut, and this is what they've done. It does really look like he's trying to make this agency more efficient. There are things we could argue about. For example, the budget ends the Chandra X-ray Observatory. It ends the Swift Observatory. It cuts funding to the Osiris Apex mission to Apophis, the potentially dangerous asteroid. And that spacecraft is already on the way, and it costs $14 million or so per year to maintain the spacecraft for its mission. And so you can argue, yes, you should keep those. I come at this from a perspective I think that Americans should come at, which is we have a big deficit. So we need to get the budget under control. So if I want more money for those missions, and I do, then we got to find someplace else in the NASA budget to cut. We shouldn't be trying to increase the budget in any place. Let these budget cuts go through, but let's find a place to do it. And I looked through the budget, and I found some places where I think, you know, they're spending money poorly, even in this budget. There's a department called the Mission Enabling Services. This includes the equal opportunity, the security purposes. It also includes a bunch of other stuff that looks very questionable. And I look at that and say, they're spending $500 million on this stuff for you, including, by the way, human resources. You could probably trim a lot out of that and give money then to the actual missions in space. That's my point. Finally, one last point to this budget. This was ushered through very clearly by the acting administrator, Janet Petro, who was the director of Kennedy before she became acting administrator. And it seems to me she was basically given a task by the White House, you got to cut 25% of the budget at NASA. And she went through the budget and tried to figure out the most practical, intelligent way to do it. And I think she actually was well, the Trump administration was well served in its goals by her effort. And I think this might have been a factor behind withdrawing Jared Isaacman's nomination. It could be that Trump was so impressed with how she handled the situation, he decided, why not stick with someone who's an insider at NASA? I don't know if he'll name her as the nominee for the actual administrator, but she's there now, and she seems to be doing the job that Trump wants.
Is there a prospect for the planetary missions to be taken over by some of the billionaires that are everywhere?
That's not mentioned here. This budget continues several planetary proposed missions, such as the Dragonfly mission to Titan, the moon of Saturn. It keeps budget for both the rovers on Mars and for a number of the orbiters, such as Lunar Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. It ends missions like Mars Odyssey, which has been sitting now for almost more than a quarter century, and is basically used only for communications right now. But in general, the program, what it does is it says right now, if you want to do your planetary missions down the road, we got to get the budget in control first. And maybe billionaires and private companies should consider doing this instead. And as I pointed out early in the week, there are private companies that are thinking of doing these kind of things. For example, the budget cuts two proposed Venus program projects, which hadn't really gotten started yet. So there wasn't really much money spent, and the NASA can't afford it. You got a private company, Rocket Lab, that's putting its own Venus probe together on its own dime. And that's the kind of stuff that maybe should start happening.
iSpace, resilience, crashed on the moon. I read the detail of when we were waiting for the Japanese engineers to confirm. What happened, Bob?
Yeah, the company confirmed that its resilience lunar lander, the second it has tried to land on the moon, crashed just like the first did, or at least it crashed. We don't know if it's exactly the same. According to the company, looking at the currently available data, they think the laser rangefinder used to measure the distance to the surface had delays in obtaining its valid measurement values. In other words, it took too long for the data to get back to the spacecraft. As a result, the spacecraft decelerates sufficiently as it was coming down. So as it was getting very close to the surface, it was just moving too fast, and so it crashed. They had similar problems on the previous mission having to do with software and data at the elevation, altimeter data, with their laser altimeter. Interestingly enough, the Intuitive Machines landers, both that failed, had similar kind of problems. And as I mentioned last year, The landers, the unmanned landers that both the Soviet Union and the Americans launched in the 60s were much more successful, and they didn't have, they were built with slide rules and didn't have this high-tech computer laser technology. I have a feeling that the reliance on this stuff might be counterproductive, or at least they're not getting it right, and it's a problem. So this is unfortunate for this company. They have three contracts, one with NASA, one with Japan Space Agency JAXA, and one with the European Space Agency for three different future landers. I don't know how this failure will impact those. It's probably not going to impact them much, but it is a question whether they can.
Private space is attracting equity, and that's a good thing. Some are going public. Some are raising funds without going public. Orbital Tug Impulse is raising money. To do what?
Yeah, so Impulse,
what does a tug do?
All right. So Orbital Tug is basically a little engine that is attached to the satellite that once it's deployed by the rocket in its orbit, the tug then uses its engine to move the satellite to the preferred orbit in space. If you have a CubeSat and it launches a secondary payload on a rocket, it's not the prime payload, it is not going to get necessarily into the orbit you want it. And so you hire a tug company to attach an engine to a little tug to your satellite so that after the rocket deploys it, the tug can get you to where you want to be. And that's Impulse Space. This is a private startup. It was founded by the first engineer of SpaceX back in the early days, Tom Mullup. It focuses on building engines, but also on building these tugs. And it has two different tugs, a smaller and a larger one. It's done a demo mission with the smaller one. It has now raised $300 million in private investment capital to proceed. This is in addition to $150 million it raised last year. And so this company, has money now to build its tugs and to sell them. And it's got contracts for those tugs. So this is just a cottage industry that's getting into place. You mentioned private public investment, John. The company Voyager Technologies, formerly Voyager Space, they're the ones building the Starlab space station. This is one of the four private space stations now under development to replace ISS. It has now announced its first public stock offering, and it's valued at $1.6 billion. It's a 30-day option. You can buy shares for a variety of amounts. They're trying to raise almost $400 million with this rate of funding. Their Starlab space station is interesting. It would go up as a single module inside Starship. And so that's how their concept is. They have not built anything. They've just worked on designs, which makes me rate them low among the competition among these four stations. They're the only one that's not built anything. But nonetheless, they've now gone to raise money financially from the public stock, and we'll see how that plays out.
Axiom. Bob, I'm trying to think of what Axiom most resembles on Earth. Is this, say, a high-end Viking cruise ship? Is that what it – how they
Well, remember, Axiom is one of the four commercial space stations under development.
Right.
And as part of its operation to prove, they're all competing for a big NASA contracts. And so to prove that it knows how to deal with space station operations, it has run previously three commercial passenger flights to ISS on Dragon capsules and Falcon 9 rockets. It's about to fly its fourth commercial mission to ISS. It was supposed to launch on the June 8th. Originally supposed to launch on June 5th. They delayed it a few days for a variety of scheduling reasons, they said. They've now delayed it another 2 days for the same scheduling reasons. They say also to complete final processing of the capsule. This is a new Dragon capsule, as yet unnamed. It would be the fifth in SpaceX's fleet of capsules. They've delayed it for two more days. I don't think there's anything serious involved. But once again, yes, are they a cruise company? Well, it's all a question of where their customers are. Previous missions, they had private citizens they flew. This particular tourist flight, their passengers are government astronauts from Poland, Hungary, and India. So there's money to be made from even governments for these private space stations, and Axiom is demonstrating that.
Nova Scotia for a spaceport. Is that a good angle for orbit?
This is a spaceport, John, that we have been talking about since 2016. They originally proposed, the company is called Maritime Launch Services. Originally what they were going to do is offer a rocket and the spaceport. You have a satellite company, you put your satellite on their rocket, and they launch it from their spaceport. The rocket was from the Ukraine. They lost that with the Ukraine war. So they've now offered the spaceport to everybody, any rocket company that wants to use it. They've been announcing signings with a very variety of rocket companies, sometimes unnamed, for the last year or so. I'm not sure this is going anywhere. They've now announced that they've signed a contract with a suborbital company that based in Europe called T-Minus Engineering that flies suborbital test flights. And it has a rocket called the Barracuda that's a little more powerful for suborbital test flights. They say they've launched it many times, though there's no evidence they ever launched it at all. And they now signed the contract to fly from Nova Scotia and do suborbital tests sometime before the end of this year. Let's wait and see. I'm from Missouri at this point, John.
Bob Zimmerman. He keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring, and we're going to look at the sun very closely. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.